Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
This is the Blue Moon Podcast. Coming up, we've got all the news and views from Manchester City's week. It's your club, and this is your show.
I don't know. You go away for a week, and when you come back, the house is on fire and there's widespread panic thanks to defeats in both the Premier League and the Champions League. Great to be back in the Blue Moon Podcast saddle. Not so great to have to pick apart what happened against Newcastle and Leverkusen, but here we go. What went wrong in the North East in a game where City created a lot but also conceded a lot? What on earth was with the 10 changes that Pep Guardiola made for an important European game? And what damage has the last week done to the good vibes that have been building up recently? We'll talk about all of that shortly. Plus, with Leeds up next and then Fulham in midweek, we'll hear from Callum Archibald from the Square Ball and Sammy James from Fulhamish to get their perspectives on the upcoming games. No putting it off any longer. Strap in, everyone, and let's do this. I'm David Mooney. With me is City fan and from the City Ramble, Amos Murphy.
Hello.
And from the Times, Paul Hurst is back. Hi, Paul.
Hi, David. How are you doing?
Well, yeah. It's been a week. Yeah, I think like peek behind the curtain for everyone. Me and Paul have been trying to get a date together to get him back on the podcast for this season, and it's always been, oh, I can't do this week, but like maybe next week, and then next week there's been a reason why we couldn't do it, and then eventually, like a few weeks ago, he said, oh, I can do this one in a couple of weeks' time, and yeah, you've walked into this one with the house on fire, mate.
Yeah, the bearer of bad news, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, Grim Reaper arriving on the horizon. Hey, Moss, you good? It's been a few weeks since you've been on.
Yeah. I think last time I was on, I was dying of some sort of cold flu. So I'm happy to be able to speak for more than a minute. But I guess the listeners won't be happy for me to speak for more than a minute. So swings and roundabouts.
Yeah, well, we'll get to all that in a second. Because first, I wanted to try and lighten the mood. So I'm going to pile the pressure on both of you two now. Guardiola said recently that he regretted his behaviour with the cameraman after Newcastle and that he apologised to him straight away. So spill the beans then. When have you regretted your own behaviour? Hey, Moss.
Well, you see, David, I feel like this is your elaborate plan to eliminate Man City podcast competitors because
you invite me on my show and cancel yourself.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You invite me onto your show and you want me to expose myself. For legal reasons, there will be some that I keep under wraps. But I think to keep it Blue Moon podcast related, I believe a show with Adam Monk went out over the international break. And I certainly regretted one of the answers in your top 10. I think it was Man City matches at Wembley. Disclaimer, I feel like I was like one or two days off returning from holiday. You asked us in the evening, we were recording in the morning, and it was genuinely, I just about managed to name 10 matches at Wembley. I won't ruin it too much for anyone who hasn't listened yet, but yeah. I'll do that.
He picked the Wigan game. The Wigan game where they got beat and Pellegrini's was linked with City and Mancini got sacked. Like that was in the top 10 games at Wembley. Don't ask me how he did that.
Yeah, shameful.
Yeah, utterly appalling behaviour. Paul, I mean, obviously don't go into the depths of what goes on, what happens in the press room stays in the press room sort of things, but
anything
you've regretted?
I did wonder how far to go with this because, you know, regrets, I've had a few, as they say, you know, it could go on for, you know, how this could turn into a proper therapy session, couldn't it? But so I thought, yeah, I better not take it too deep. I think my latest regret, or the biggest regret of late, has been buying a ticket for the Steel City Derby last Sunday.
I thought that might be it. Yeah,
yeah, and that was £40 badly spent. You know, I hate Derby days. I just don't know why I put myself through it. You know, I just don't want to go. But I always end up going, and we always end up Sheffield Wednesday always end up getting beat quite handsomely. So it's just another it's a really draining, horrible experience in my history. So, yeah, that's one surefire way to ruin your weekend of buy a ticket to a derby match that you know you're going to lose. So, yeah, that's the biggest one of late.
Yeah, well, from Sheffield Wednesday's troubles to we'll lighten the mood then to two defeats with City this week. Paul, I mean, we look at what City have been doing this season and where they've been building towards. And Guardiola said it. I mean, you'll have been in so many press conferences where he's used the phrase good vibes and he's been talking about the feeling around the place. What damage do you think these two games has done to all of that?
I think it has, again, to use a well used industry phrase, is a reality check, isn't it? It's where they are at the moment. It's kind of, they've not got a squad that is as good as, you know, as Arsenal, say. You know, I was watching bits of the Arsenal match, the Arsenal Bayern Munich match last night, and I was thinking that's a level above where City were, particularly on Tuesday night. They're not far off, but it's just that I don't think they're going to be title contenders. It's just, I just think they need another a year of this squad bedding in together and for people like Foden to get back to their best, for them to be like, you know, back at the top of their kind of game again. So I just think it is, the Leverkusen defeat surprised me a lot. Not as much as the starting lineup, let me tell you that. I mean, that was shocking when I saw that starting lineup. But I just think, in terms of like the level of where City are at, I wasn't surprised that they lost to Newcastle. They are a team at the moment, City, where I can't see them going on one of those monster runs where they get, you know, 14, 15 matches in a row unbeaten. They will have four or five in a row, then lose the odd one. So I wasn't astounded by it. I don't think anyone should be panicked by it, but I just think that's where they are, where City are at the moment.
Yeah. Amos, are you finding it difficult to kind of work out what City's level is at the moment? Because as Paul says there, this is a team that is still fairly new together. But at the same time, like you think of earlier in the season, they lost those back-to-back games against Spurs and Brighton, and it was panic stations left, right and centre. And then they put that fantastic run together, and now it feels like it's panic stations again. It's like swinging wildly from one to the other.
Abstract maybe, because, you know, if you told me that this City team would reach the Champions League final, they get knocked out in the round of 16, I'd say equally both of those outcomes seem plausible. Sort of zooming in a little bit, no, because as Paul mentioned, you know, this is a new team, and I feel like the Leverkusen game, as I'm sure we'll delve deep into, is in isolation, but it has the potential to sort of seep out, and the toxicity can sort of infect from that game. It is completely bonkers. I feel like it is self-destruct mode completely from Guardiola, and again, question marks as to why. But in terms of, like, you know, the big picture, yes and no, because this is a brand new team. There are some very good players. There's still a great spine. You know, at either end of the football pitch, you've got two world-class match winners, potentially the best in their position in Erling Haaland and Donnarumma, which is why, for me anyway, I always felt like City possibly harboured more of a chance in the Champions League, obviously it's not a one-off game because the two-legged ties, but, you know, in that sort of where the stakes somewhat at the same time higher but also lower because across the 38 game season anyway.
They're on the day stakes, aren't they, rather than yes, across the season stakes.
And you need, like Arsenal have the squad to win a 38 game Premier League season. City certainly don't, as demonstrated with that some of the rotation against Leverkusen. So yes and no. I think City, to cap off the hat trick of the industry catchphrases, they're in a bad moment, but it is a long season, and look, I'm sure we'll pivot onto Leverkusen, but I feel like the implications for that one could be more long lasting than we maybe realise at the time.
Paul, we've just witnessed Liverpool hit 9 defeats in 12, which was City's worst run of last season as well. Does this, the Leverkusen performance and result and the kind of feeling afterwards, it doesn't get close to anything that was going on last season, does it?
No. I think it's, you know, I think I was shocked at the team, but at the same time, you did look at that 11 and thought there are some very, very good players in there. But in terms of like the whole, you know, where, you know, the state of City at the moment, you know, you're talking about, if you look at that league, the Premier League, just going back to that again, it's such a, maybe this is reflective of the media industry more than anything else, but a few weeks ago, people were thinking, you know, oh, he's, we're questioning whether Maresca was the right man for the job. And Chelsea, now they're suddenly, you know, in second position behind, they're chasing Arsenal. And, you know, Ruben Amorim had turned a corner, and then I went to Old Trafford on Monday night, and God, that was one of the worst performances I've seen from Man United post Fergie. And that's
I think what you mean to say there is that was one of the funniest games you've been to.
There's a big pool of matches.
It's a safe space, Paul. It's okay.
And I was at NK Dons for that 4-0. Crikey. I just think it's like I said before, I don't think there's any real need to panic. I think that the league is pretty. There's a long list of teams, is what I'm trying to say, who are shooting themselves in the foot at the moment. And I'm sure, well, I'm not sure, but I'm. You know, at one stage, Arsenal will have a slip up, won't they? They can't keep serenely, progressing through the season without losing. So it's as long as they sort of hang in there. I reckon if they're 6-7 points behind come sort of January, early February, I still think that they're in with a shout. So there's absolutely no reason to be panicking at the moment.
Yeah. Now we've danced around the changes for Leverkusen, Amos. Like Guardiola will say, and I'm sure he did say, all of those players needed minutes and they need to get some time in the team. He had named three, I think, unchanged teams in the run-up to that one. So he decided that he did need to make some changes. The team, maybe on paper, is fairly strong, as Paul says. There's a lot of quality players in there. But all of that rotation all at once, it ultimately, is that the reason why the performance was as it was?
Short answer, yes. I rarely get rattled by football results like this because not to break the fourth wall on the David Mooney multiverse, I was listening to Let Me Talk. And to be fair, I think it was Sam was saying something along the lines of like, you know, when Pep does these mistakes and the classic gets branded as overthinking and whatnot, like a lot of the time you can sit back and you can go, I understand that. And I can see the logic behind that. And, you know, for example, Chelsea is you know, probably the top of that list for many people, but not that anyone would be sadistic enough to do so. But if you go back and you watch that Champions League final in Porto, I hate the phrase, but Pep probably coached a win. You know, Edouard Mendy makes some fantastic saves. City actually pinned Chelsea back quite a bit. They have some good chances that on another day, for a final as well, probably go in. For this Leverkusen game, the upside heading into it was so minimal because I genuinely feel like the only way this move would have been deemed a success is if City were 3-0 up at half-time. And I say that because, say, for example, they get a scrappy 1-0 or even 2-0 win. If they're winning 1-0 with 20 minutes to go, they've got to make substantial changes to see out the game. If they are 0-0 with 20 minutes to go, they've got to make substantial changes to bring the players on, like Erling Haaland, Doku, Foden, to try and win the game. So it's like, at some point, you're probably going to have to play these players anyway. If you're so hell-bent on doing the rotation, start them, and at half-time, make a pact to yourself, no matter the scoreline, if it's 0-0, if it's 2-0, either way, take them off there. And I think if City, for example, had been 2-0 down at half-time, Haaland, Doku, Foden come off, we go, that's maybe a little bit weird, but I'll tell you what, Guardiola will come out and he'll say that they need to be rotated. Marmoush, Savinho, whoever comes in, fine. The 10 changes at once is absurd, no less because I think you could have been bringing in Pelé, Maradona in the prime, obviously. Goodness. you know, you could have been bringing any selection.
Very much alive. Yeah, alive. Yes. Helps. Yeah,
yeah. Let me change that. A selection of any 10 world-class players, and I think you're still going to get a dysfunctional performance because these players haven't, shock horror, haven't played together much this season, and half of them aren't even fit. So it was just, I think that's, to summarise, one of the maddest night Guardiola has had as City boss. Absolutely crazy.
Yeah, it's funny, Paul, because Amos mentions the Chelsea Champions League final, but real ones know the Lyon game was when he went mad.
Yeah.
Back three, Eric Garcia. Yeah, yeah. I was Don Farrell pointed that one out in his post match for the Leverkusen game. Afterwards, Paul. Like I only saw his interview with TNT where he seemed to show a little bit of contrition that maybe it wasn't the right thing to have done. How was he speaking afterwards? Did he, was it kind of very much, yeah, this one's on me?
Yeah, he took the blame for it straight away. He opened up. He was very, you know, he was very upfront about it. Said I made too many. He said I've never done this before in my life, and it was a mistake. And it just got me thinking back to that that Burton Albion game in the League Cup. Burton Albion, as you know, as any sensible
the
person,
second leg, yeah,
great segue. For the second leg of that, obviously City won 9-0, didn't they, at the Etihad in the first leg of the semi-final. And for the second leg, he kept in that team five players who played the first leg. I mean, there were some, you know, Muric was one of them, to be fair, but De Bruyne and Mahrez, he kept them in the team for the second leg, right? And he also brought in Sergio Aguero to start up front. So I just think this guy does not rotate. You know, he's not in his nature at all. So when the team sheets came out, I was sat in the press box actually, and I was sat, funnily enough, the guy in front of us, the bench in front of us had loads of like the Leverkusen analysts, and sometimes I would try and have a little chat with him, get a bit of gossip or whatever, and I said to him like. I said, "Oh, what do you think?" And they were very optimistic. He said, "Well, we weren't very optimistic before, but now we've seen the team sheet." He said, "We were not expecting that. We were not expecting anything near that." He said, "They've been basically planning all week for Haaland, obviously for Foden, and then they got the exact opposite." And to be fair to them, they took their opportunity. I don't think it was against the run of play that they scored. I think they deserved to win. So, but yeah, I just couldn't, even though he fronted up after Pep, I just think it was still so surprising. And they've dropped out of the automatic positions now, haven't they? I think it's only on goal difference or by one point or something like that. But all of a sudden, that Real Madrid game you've got next, you can't really afford to lose that if you want to be in the top, if you want to be in the automatic positions. And I know they've got Bodo Glimt and Galatasaray at home in the following two fixtures, but they could have been pretty much gimmies, couldn't they? If City had beaten Leverkusen, and I think after all the roller coaster of last year, the Feyenoord game, another game that's probably not been mentioned for health scare reasons, you know, I don't want to get people's heart rates going up again. For all that, you know, they had a chance just to walk through, you know, just to get another win on under their belt, and it would have been what, drop 2 points from five matches, and it, because of this, you know, tinkering, it didn't happen. And the players that came on, it's difficult to ask them to change.
It's hard to wrestle momentum, isn't it? Once it's going one way,
It was only going one way, wasn't it? I was surprised he didn't. I mean, I was, when he brought O'Reilly on, I thought that's a smart move, because Itnori was, although he put in one block, he was just getting all up, he was getting run around by their right winger, wasn't he? So that was a smart move, but you know, I think the game had gone by that point, I think.
Yeah, if it's like, is it any consolation, Amos, that when you kind of contrast that to the Newcastle game with a more standard 11 at Newcastle, which had been unchanged for a few weeks, like that performance, while Newcastle had a lot of chances, City also had a lot of chances. It's kind of that one. That one's a lot more of a on another day performance.
Yeah. I mean, this is the mad thing about it. I think most people after Newcastle were relishing this Leverkusen game to get back to sort of just shake off that performance. Because as we mentioned at the top, you know, this team is going to do five games where they'll win and they'll go away from home against a tricky opponent and they'll play decent enough, but probably end up losing because that's, you know, that's just where they are.
Yeah, it's so I think, a coin sort of game.
Yeah, exactly. Totally. And, you know, it's actually astonishing thinking back to the conversations we're having before the game. But I was like, the fact it's the Tuesday match as well is even better because it couldn't have, apart from being the early kickoff, which we don't get at home in England. It could not have come earlier for a chance to really shake it off. You know, obviously we had the laugh at Man United on Monday. That made us feel a little bit better. And then you're like, you know what? Leverkusen at home, of course, third in the Bundesliga, decent enough Champions League opposition, but it's not the Leverkusen of Saint-Xhaka and Frimpong and Xabi Alonso. It's a, you know, a team that three games into the Bundesliga season sacked Erik ten Hag. And the actual result itself is one thing, but you know, you mentioned the Real Madrid game. That for me, probably heading into it, is a net loss. And if you get anything from it, it's probably a positive, because that's, you know, Real Madrid at the Bernabeu. They're sat fifth in the Champions League table. They score goals for fun this season. Then you've got a situation where, obviously, Bodo Glimt away in January in the Arctic Circle on a plastic pitch. That probably should have been the game that you do this on. You know, Haaland, of course, it's in Norway. Maybe you take him for ceremonial reasons, but like, mate, you sit on the bench and you enjoy, like, you lap up the applause. You know, you'd want to eliminate the risks there. Galatasaray have done some decent things in Champions League this season. They seem to be going off the boil a little bit in the last couple of matches. But that, you know, and as well, you look at the January to sort of early February schedule. I think City play Chelsea, United, Spurs, and heading into February, Spurs and Liverpool. That isn't to mention a potential semi-final in the League Cup, an FA Cup third round. Who knows what that's going to be? I would love to know, and I don't think we'll get it until maybe Guardiola's left or whatever. I would love to know what the decision, you know, round the round table of Pep and Linders and Kolo Toy, what made them go, yeah, you know what, 10 changes would be a good idea? Because
let me offer a little bit of potential reasoning, because yes, all of that, what you talk about in the new year is true. But at the same time, that's a new year problem. Whereas right now, they have to beat Leeds. They have to beat Fulham, because they can't afford to let Arsenal get too far ahead of them.
But would you not say, like, okay, maybe this is me overestimating this team, but I would say, at home for the next two, well, what would have been the next two matches, I think City have got enough in them to half rotate and beat Leverkusen and, you know, even maybe a little bit more rotate and beat Leeds. Leeds are second bottom in the Premier League. Fulham's Fulham. It could be tricky. It could not be.
We've not gone on to the previews yet, mate, but if we want to pile on the misery, we can do it. We can do it. maybe they've got enough to beat Leeds, but, you know.
Well, you would hope so. You would hope so. But if it was Liverpool or Arsenal away this weekend, that makes a million times more sense. The fact it's Leeds at home, I don't know, man. I've just been I've been wrestling with myself, trying to find some justification. I just can't.
I suppose he thought, because he's not been rotating the team that much, has he? You know, he's almost like settled. The only variable is whether you played John Stones or Diaz at centre half, or, you know, which, but the rest of the team has been set up, hasn't it, for the last three or four games. So he probably thought that was the, you know, that was the reason why he had to bring some of the others in. And he does have a bigger squad than he did last year. But still, like you were saying, Amos, it would have been three or four or five changes would have been enough, I think. You know, get Bernardo in that midfield and then just run in it, and maybe Doku, and then, you know, that's a good enough team to beat. I mean, Leverkusen, they had suspensions and injuries as well, and like you're saying, they've lost their manager, got rid of the replacement, and then after three matches, and then you know, they've also lost you know, likes of Frimpong and Verts and Tar, and so it's, you know, it was an open goal really, and I don't know how they missed it.
Well, City have had their troubles finishing chances anyway, so it just a metaphor for the entire season, is it? If it's not Haaland in front of the open goal, no one's putting it in.
You see stats pop up all the time about clubs and players, and you want to know that exact thing about City. There's an answer. Statcity.co.uk. Want to find out all of the players who played alongside club legends like David Silva, Sergio Aguero or Vincent Kompany? Or maybe you'd like to know which team found it hardest to score past Joe Hart. You can find out City's record in every competition, at every stadium, and under every manager. Just go to statcity.co.uk and browse away. That's statcity.co.uk.
about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Get your ears around our bonus episodes every Monday. Patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
Just quickly on Newcastle as well, Paul, there's been a bit of a focus of the officiating and the anger that has come from it. I mean, the first decision, Foden and Fabian Schär, can you see a reason why that's not a penalty?
I thought that was a penalty. I think it's that should be defined as a reckless tackle. I think that would have given, you know, that would have been justified as a penalty. And I just think he went late. He went on the, like, right. He planted his studs in on the top of Foden's boot, didn't he, on his ankle. And that is, you know, if he'd have landed, if he'd have actually connected with the ground, that could have been a really bad injury for Foden. So I just thought that was reckless, and that was why it should have been given. I was astounded that it wasn't given on review, and the way that they cleared it up so quickly, it was just like, right, you know, 30 seconds, we're gone kind of thing. It's I was astounded by that.
The phrase that they used was, it was contact without consequence.
Right.
And I think as Foden's writhing around on the floor, I wondered what the consequence was, you know.
So the 6-foot, you know, train that's coming to you, you know, a massive, you know, guy just running at you, that will be inconsequential what he's doing. I mean, if you see that out of the corner of your eye, you're going to be bricking it, aren't you? I mean, that will have an impact on your mindset. You know, how can that be inconsequential?
Had he been stretched off, would that have warranted a VAR overturn? Is that
no? Because it would have still been inconsequential, apparently.
Yeah, don't worry about it. Nothing's
happened. And Amos, the other decision that people have been upset about is the offside in the build up to Newcastle's winner. I have painstakingly been through pretty much the laws of the game and kind of protocols to find out exactly the decision making process. So. It was a semi-automated offside decision, so no humans were drawing lines. There was none of this set the crosshairs on at various points. What is set by the VAR and why it's semi-automated is the VAR sets the point of contact, which in this instance is Voltimada's header. So he heads the ball, the VAR presses it, says, yep, this is the frame at which it happens, and then the semi-automated system takes over from there. It looks in the CG image like Diaz is in a different body position, which some fans have suggested is because the wrong point of contact has been selected. It's been selected after Voltimada's headed the ball rather than at the point of the header. Some fans have said that he looks like he's jumping, but when I watch the video back, it might be that because as Diaz turns, he does a couple of bunny hops kind of to get his body position into that place. He may just be in the middle of one of those. Plus also the angle of the TV camera and the angle of the CG image that we get is different. So that may also distort what the body positions look like. But again, it may also be that the wrong point of contact has been selected and that we don't know. What makes it seem unlikely for me on that is that PGMOL have been pretty quick to clarify when they've made errors like of significance like that in the past. You think of the, was it Brentford against Arsenal when the offside wasn't checked and it should have been offside. And Spurs against Liverpool when they disallowed an onside goal. They had statements out pretty quickly over that, and they haven't said anything about this. It makes me, unless there is a grand conspiracy to actually harm City, it makes me think that the protocol was correct. And it also appears that the offside line is drawn to the wrong part of Diaz's body when you look at the image. And that's because the boundary is the T-shirt line on the arm. So that's the part of the arm that decides handball. On this image, the marker for the T-shirt line is actually on the other side of Diaz's arm, meaning that in the CG image, the image of Diaz is hiding the top of the arm. Dale Johnson, who formerly of ESPN, now of the BBC, had written about that on the BBC website. I didn't know that, and a lot of fans don't know that the line can go onto the other side of the player's body. And then to top it all off, the final part of this is it may actually be that Bruno Guimaraes was in fact offside and ahead of Diaz, and that's why he looks offside in the still. But there's a 5 centimetre tolerance level built into semi-automated offside in the UK that isn't there in European football. And that 5 centimetres is the thickness of the yellow line in the graphic. So on the still image that we see, it looks like Guimaraes is ahead. And that could be because he is actually ahead, but he's within the 5 centimetre threshold. Mm. So all of that in mind, what on earth do you think?
The beautiful game, eh? 11v11. I know, Jesus. First of all, that was as good as an explanation I think I've ever heard. So fair play.
I'm knackered though now. I've spent ages having to read all this.
I'm not surprised. I genuinely don't mean to be obtuse, but part of me doesn't care because they're the sort of VAR offside decisions that I look at. And so, don't get me wrong, like first viewing, first replay, I was like, yeah, he looks offside. And if the computer men tell me that the thresholds and the point of contact and whatnot isn't fine, like, you know, I don't necessarily want to be seeing the fingernails and the toenail offsides chalking off goals because it's ridiculous. What I will say is I've had this thought for a while. I don't have the answer, which is easier said than done, obviously, but I do feel like the current offside law isn't fit for purpose in the VAR era, let alone the semi-automated offside era, because it does feel like the nitpicking and, you know, that football's a fast, intense game, of course. Like, you know, we're talking split seconds of a striker or an attacker just genuinely moving the shoulder or something. And for me, I don't feel like that is worthy punishment. So I'm happy for this one to stand. You know, the penalty was obviously horrendous, but this one, I'm like, yeah, fine. Like the actual point of annoyance was the fact that it took away any lingering momentum City might have had to go on, get another equaliser, because it was about 4 minutes to check. And I think from that point on, you're like, this is not happening today. This is just City's day.
They actually checked an offside on Harvey Barnes, an offside on Bruno Guimaraes. And Paul, Donnarumma wanted a foul in the build-up. They checked a foul on Donnarumma in the build-up, which, I mean, watching it back, he isn't getting that, is he?
No, he likes a good moan at the ref, doesn't he, Donnarumma? But, Yeah, I agree with Amos. I kind of, you can watch these things for hours and just come up with, you know, 5 or 6 different outcomes. I just, you know, I am a big supporter of VAR, and mainly because I watch Championship football and see how many horrendous decisions are given against your team. Well,
I watch Championship football and think, goodness me, bring back the glory days of no VAR. Yeah.
You two are literally that meme where the guys are sat on the bus, aren't they? And one's looking doom and gloom, one's really happy.
But that said, we did. Wednesday got away with there wasn't a penalty given against us. I can't remember, I think we played Middlesbrough the other day, and our goalkeeper managed to volley one of their forwards pretty much into the stands, and a penalty wasn't given. So that's
football heritage.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I love that part of it. They get these conspiracy theories, and, you know, the lines and the thickness of the lines. I just think, you know, let them do their jobs. You know, 95% of those decisions are correct, whereas before the threshold was much lower. So, yeah, stick with it and just let it be. Just move on.
What I would say, Amos, I wonder is maybe it's the messaging around the VAR decision, because shouldn't fans just be told these things? Like a lot of the anger could be dissipated if fans were just told, yeah, Bruno may actually be offside, but nobody wanted these like toenail offsides. So we built in a 5 centimeter threshold. Now it doesn't actually cut the mustard because you'll still get the toenail offsides. They'll just be five centimeters yeah. further forward. But like, that's the reasoning. Like, just tell the fans that. Tell them that yes, this is why it looks like this in this image, but not this one.
Yeah, I totally agree. I feel like the most of the implication, the way that it's been implemented, VAR, has been a bit of a disaster. Really, it kind of has been. Like some, you know, the referees and a little bit like a college project. And it's like, you know, come back to us and this is what we've come up with. It's taken them so long to even explain decisions in the stadium, which for the majority of the football public, that is, you know, people who go to matches are in the minority, and fair enough. It is something that I feel like has been built for the TV product. But at the same time, it's taken them so long to get to a point where even the messaging around that is being explained. So I don't know what it is. Maybe you sort of enforce some compulsory learning modules for football fans at the start of every season.
Yeah, you know, only get your season ticket if you've attended this class. Yeah,
yeah, the online modules that you get at workplaces. I don't know. I feel like we're kind of, the horse has certainly bolted with this, and whether you're pro VAR, anti VAR, VAR in general, I don't know. Like, it just feels like there's so many issues that have sprung up at this point. It's going to take a bit of time to clean up the message. I mean, I had no idea about the 5 centimeter threshold, and I consume, goodness me, I consume far too much football content than you'd ever want to believe. So yeah, that was news to me today. So clearly there's an issue there.
I found out this week when I was reading all of that stuff about what went wrong with with that goal that City conceded. Let's look ahead to the upcoming games then. And we'll start with a look at what's going on at Elland Road. I've been speaking to Leeds fan Callum Archibald, who is a contributor to The Square Ball, to find out exactly what's going on.
I think the idea this season was that we came up and played a style that was quite combative. There was a few mentions of like Newcastle Junior, that kind of thing, quite combative in midfield, lean on set pieces, sign lots of kind of tall players, physically fit players, lean on stamina and physical work, and have one or two players who can maybe make a difference in open play, but generally try and do that. And I think for the first probably 5 or 6 games, you could see what we were trying to do. There's obviously points where I think we were maybe fortunate to get goals and results, but there was a point where I think we were on, I think we're still on 11 points, but we were on 11 points a few games ago after West Ham. I think after that, everybody was saying, yeah, it's ticking along quite nicely, quite happy with it. But there's just been a few results and performances of late. The Burnley one kind of started it, where we just weren't in the game from minute 1 to minute 90. And I think playing the slow build-up style that we've kind of reverted to, which is Farke's comfort blanket, and it's what's done him so well in the Championship, his dominant sides, has meant that kind of smart, tactical, tactically aware opposition managers can just pick us off at will. And I think the Villa game at the weekend just gone was a classic example of that. For the first half, we were superb. You know, we did all the things you'd want us to do. And, you know, the reality is our squad is probably bottom three. You could maybe argue 17th if you're being uber generous. But the thing that really levels us up is that physically kind of in-your-face style. And I think for 45 minutes, we had Aston Villa on the ropes, and it was like, okay, this is not bad. Unai Emery, half-time, has clearly gone in and gone, right, it's not working. A couple of tactical tweaks, a couple of subs. 2 minutes later, it's 1-1, and the momentum is just gone. And at that point, I think that's where Daniel Farke's weaknesses really show. He's so reactive as a manager that Aston Villa had made 4 tactical substitutions before he made a single one. And we were the ones that needed to make those because the game was getting away from us. And you kind of, when the fans are chanting, make a sub on an hour, I think that there's a point there where you have to listen to them. But I don't know. I don't know where we go from here. There's a chance that I'm talking about Daniel Farke and come Saturday, come the weekend, he's not even in charge.
I was going to say, is he in trouble? Because you look at that recent run. I mean, you mentioned the West Ham win. That's the only win in the last 6 Premier League games. The other 5 have all been defeats. That's not a run that can carry on much longer if you're going to stay up.
No. And the longer it goes on, the worse a prospect we look, I think, to a potential manager and just generally in the squad and the fans. Because I think as much as winning becomes a habit, losing is a really hard habit to get yourself out of. You only have to look at when, you know, when we got relegated a couple of seasons ago, that when we go down, it's kind of clear the decks. And it took us 2 or 3 weeks at the start of that championship season to really shake it off. So once you get into this point, goals are hard to come by. Every concession feels like a dagger to the heart. And it's, yeah, I think ultimately he is in trouble and he should be in trouble because results can't continue. But more than that, there's just been some performances of late that are seriously concerning. The Forest game, and I know Forest are likely to pick up now because the squad level is much better than where they've been. But we scored a goal out of nothing in that game. But from then on, I don't think we had a shot on target in the rest of that game. And we didn't particularly look like we were ever going to threaten. We've got nothing that feels repeatable as a pattern. You know, you look at teams and you try and think, well, this is what they try and do. Kind of my favourite thing about Pep's Man City teams was always, well, you know what they're going to try and do, but you just can't stop it. You know, Raheem Sterling at the back post, it's like, well, yeah, just mark it. Well, it's fine. It's easy to say, stop the cutback and whatever, but he just found a way to make that happen again and again and again. And it was predicated on, this is how I think the best way to score a goal at this point in football is. I'm just going to manufacture a way to make it keep happening. I don't think we've got any of those. Every goal we score just seems to be, oh, it's gone in. There you go. Or it's a penalty, or it's like, every single one of our 11 goals I think we've got in the 12 games, it just feels different to the last. There's nothing that I can look at and say, well, that's what we're good at and that's what we're going to keep doing. And I think it just gets to a point for me where, you know, as we can talk about the squad issues, and I think there is a lack of cutting thrust and drive at the top end of the pitch that was always going to mean that we're probably not going to score many goals in the season. But we're chucking them in at the other end and nothing feels cohesive. And I think at that point, when more than one or two things feel broken, you have to look at the manager. Mm.
It's difficult as well, because I have this theory that that people always say they'll score enough goals, they'll stay up, when actually it's clean sheets that keep you up. It's being able to keep it out at the other end. And you look at Leeds this season, how do you think they're doing defensively? Because, I mean, when you look at the goals against column, it's not that much. It's probably the best in the kind of bottom five.
It is, but I think the problem was that the plan in the summer and was talked about was to do that, to be quite tight defensively at the back and accept that there's going to be some nil-nils. You know, we might lose some 1-0, and we did lose a couple by tight margins in the first few weeks of the season, but we were always competing, so it never felt kind of like, oh, that's a disaster. It just felt like, look, you've come out on the wrong side. We've been unfortunate in a couple of games, but maybe it'll swing back the other way if we keep doing what we're doing. But the concessions in recent games feel more problematic. It feels like we're conceding the same goal quite a lot. And there's some errors in there as well, but yeah, and those happen, you know, as many a pundit will say, that every goal you can point at 1, 2, 3, 4 errors from the opposition, because that tends to be how a goal comes about. And I think the problem is, because we're not going to score many, you have to be good at the back. And as soon as that goes, it feels terminal. It feels like, oh, we're 2-1 down now. There's no way we're going to score 3 to win a game. So once the opposition have got one early doors, it's like, oh, now you've got to hold out for 70, 80 minutes and chase the game a bit. And at the minute, it just feels like, And I'm sure you've probably been here in the past with City, it's when you concede a goal, it feels like, oh, that's it. Like the whole thing's just going to tumble in on you. And it's such a shame, because, you know, we came up with quite a lot of optimism in May. I don't think anybody was deluding themselves that we were going to be top half or anything crazy like that. But I think there was some hope that we'd get the strategy right, that we'd play football that was competitive, that we'd look at the likes of Brentford and Forest that have stayed up in recent years and lean on that kind of, right, make the home ground a fortress, be quite physical, lean on set pieces, and just do what needs to be done to get to 38, 40 points and kind of draw a line under the season at the end of it. But what we have at the minute is Daniel Farke changing the goalpost from his, right, well, you know, we've never been in the bottom three, was his press conference on Friday. Saturday afternoon, we're in the bottom three. Sunday, we lose the game and we're firmly in there. And then we come into a run where we've got City, we've got Liverpool, and we've got Chelsea in a row. And that always looked problematic at the start of the season. So the hope was that we'd have a points total above 1 point per game going into it. But now we're below going into that run. It almost feels like you're in miracle territory to keep him in a job.
Yeah. How do you approach the weekend then? Because coming away to the Etihad hasn't traditionally been easy. But at the same time, this isn't the same City as it was in the past. They're certainly better than they were last season, but there are still vulnerabilities there. So how do you think he approaches it if he is indeed still in a job?
Well, the way I'd hope he'd approach it would be to, you know, to sit in a bit, try and dig in, be physical, frustrate, don't leave spaces. Certainly don't leave any space for Haaland to run in behind, because if it, as much as he'll refuse to celebrate or, you know, do a little applaud to the away end at the end of the game because he is from Leeds, he'd love nothing more than to score 2, 3, 4 like he's done in the past. My fear is that it looks vaguely similar to what we've been doing in recent weeks, which is try to do a kind of half-baked build-up from the back, try to be kind of physical and on the front foot, but the minute that we concede a goal, it all just feels a little bit desperate. Now, you've probably seen it plenty of times over the year when an opposition's game plan is just to sit in and hope that you can hold out and get to the second half, and then it all gets a bit frustrating. Maybe you nick something. But the problem with that strategy is that if you manage to score after 8 minutes, the game's kind of done. Because
what then?
Because yeah. What then? It's like, oh, well, our entire plan was to sit in, waste time and frustrate, and now they're 1-0 up, so we have to attack, and then, you know, holes all over the shop. And then it's my fear is that it gets away from us quite quickly. And it's, you know, it's 2 or 3 before we can even really lay a glove on you and make it tricky. I'm sure in your mind it's the opposite, and it's, oh God, they're going to score a horribly scrappy goal, and it's it's going to be one of those games where we just absolutely gift
that's
it.
That's just how football works.
It is. Worst case scenario every time, isn't it? Ultimately, if you can get Foden or Doku or whoever kind of in those little half spaces between the fullback and our centre back. And most of our goals appear to be coming in that little space between the left centre back and the left back at the minute. So Fox kind of alluded to it, and there's a lot of issues with it. And I think it's just people don't know who's supposed to be covering where. The Ampadu in defensive midfield's been dragged across but not quite making it. Okafor's pressing the man in front, and it's all just breaking down a little bit in that position. And we seem to be conceding the same cutback goal over and over again, in that somebody gets into that space to the byline and then somebody in the middle to just slip it in. The Brighton game a few weeks ago, all three goals were just that, and it probably could have been 5 or 6 on the day, entirely through that. So my fear is that you find that space once, and that's kind of probably game plan over for us at that point.
Yeah, and Jeremy Doku's been fantastic in those pockets in the last kind of 6-8 weeks as well. So that'll be one to keep an eye on. Callum, I don't wish to pile on the misery too much, but we do have a charity bet coming up, and I very rarely get them right, so I always give my prediction over to the guests. What would you go for?
I'd like to think we'd get a goal and compete, and it'd be 3-1. But realistically, I'm going to give us a go because, hey, we've got to have some fun. We'll say 4-1 City.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news. It doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
QTS is building more than a data center in Dane County. We're partnering with Alliant Energy to enable 750 megawatts of new renewable energy sources, supporting sustainable generation while lowering costs. We use a closed-loop, water-free cooling system that conserves billions of gallons of water each year. And we're investing millions locally, from scholarships and workforce development to nonprofits and first responders. QTS, powered by people, driven by purpose. Paid for by QTS.
This is the Blue Moon Podcast. Listen to it. Drink it in.
That was Callum Archibald. Paul, given Leeds and Fulham's form and the 10 changes that City made in midweek, should fans be pleased to see 10 changes this weekend?
Yes, very much so, yeah. I mean, it's just... who deserves to keep the pace? You know, if Nico probably, he'll stay. He plays every game now, doesn't he? Bless him. He's the new workhorse, isn't he? He's in decent form, to be fair. But like, I think you bring all the other players back in. The idea of having Doku and Foden and Cherky play narrowly, that has really worked, hasn't it, in the last few weeks? Obviously, Newcastle sort of got around it by passing around them, but you know, I challenge any team to manage to be able to cope with Doku, Foden, and Cherky running at you and being on the edge of your box. It's just a very difficult trio to handle, isn't it? And especially when you've got Haaland, you know, hanging around in the box as well and picking up everything that they feed through. So return to that attack. I think of all the players that played the other night, I think the most concerning was Oscar Bob. I thought, and he's like, a couple of years ago, he's one of my favourite players. Yeah, I just remember that Newcastle game when he lit that game up, him and De Bruyne, when he came off the bench. Did he come off the bench or De Bruyne came off the bench, didn't he? But now he just after that injury, he just looks really lacking in confidence, doesn't he? I don't think he's even playing for Norway. He wasn't in the last Norway team. He got in the squad, but was on the bench. And he just looks to me like a player who needs a move, whether that be a loan move or a permanent transfer, maybe with a buyback. Because I went down to Swansea and watched that match as well, and he was on our near side for the first half. And I think he tried to take his marker on once, and that's against Swansea. And for a player who's so good with the ball at his feet, I just think he needs regular game time. But come back to your question. I don't think any of them, apart from Nico, that will keep their place in the team.
Yeah. Amos, in terms of those players, I mean, Paul's talked about Bob there and lacking in confidence. Do you think any of them that played on Tuesday night are running out of road at City?
I share the concern with Oscar Bob. I don't know how much the injury played a part of it, but he just looks feeble, and he's a similar build to Rico Lewis, but you know, Rico Lewis's childhood was spent in boxing rings with his dad, and you can see he's got that fighting spirit. Oscar Bob, I don't know. Obviously I don't want to sort of project or anything, but he just doesn't look cut out for it, and that's really harsh. But
it is also his first kind of downturn in form in his career, in his senior career.
Possibly, but even still, that, you know, he scores that wonderful goal at Newcastle that same season. Granted, opportunities were limited, but I remember he started a game against Leicester or Brentford at home and was anonymous. Basically, didn't do much. And yes, of course, you can point towards the pre-season where he looked really good, but pre-season against Celtic and AC Milan, I mean, like, you know, at some point, I feel like with Oscar Bob, the time has got to come from going from being an academy prospect to being a Manchester City squad player, and on this occasion, a starter. And look, maybe he turns it around. I hope he does, because he's a delight to watch when it's going well. I just fear when things are going against City, he never seems to be the guy, apart from that Newcastle game, of course, to really step up. Savinho, I think, on the opposite wing is another one. I'm gonna exercise fan privileges here and remove any sort of semblance of professionalism and say how on earth that man stayed on the pitch for 90 odd minutes on Tuesday night. I have no idea. After his cameo,
it was maybe a case of there were other fires needed putting out more urgently. Yeah.
I don't know. That was a blaze.
Didn't he? That was
Yeah. The worst thing wasn't even the fact. I mean, the clip is hilarious, and I said it was a little bit something. It looks a little bit like out of Soccer Aid or something like that. You know, where you've got your comedian running forward, he just falls over. But the slip wasn't the most heinous part, because think a minute or two later, Foden falls over himself. It was the fact that City were chasing a goal and he decides to turn around on the counter attack, which for me was like, that's worse, mate. Yeah, that's worse. the thing is, I think he had a lot of good grace following what was a decent season last year in a bad City team. I think a lot of people were happy to see him in the second season. Obviously, that's traditionally where Guardiola attackers really come into their own. He got quite a few assists last year. The goals maybe weren't there. The Spurs saga, I don't think, has helped anyone, Savinho included, because it's brought eyes on him. And look, I see a lot of people say, you know, City rejected a £70 million bid. Maybe Spurs were willing to pay that, but For what we know, there was no bid that, you know, public knowledge, there was no bid. Maybe there was, maybe there wasn't, who knows. But anyway, but at that point, you kind of have to look like a £70 million player, because if you're having that sort of figure bandied about, you've got to look up to it. And so far this season, he simply hasn't, unfortunately, which is a shame. Again, another young lad, but there comes a point where you've got to really step up. As for the other ones, I don't know. Ike Nouri, it was a half of two halves. I feel like he started off fairly decently, but as you say, Paul, towards the second half of it, he was getting run ragged a little bit. Marmoush is an interesting one, because I think City are probably only playing in that competition because of his contributions in the second half of last season when he came in from Frankfurt. I feel like he and Kusunov as well have been victims of consequence, because they were probably, in Guardiola's initial plans, quite high up for the season. Both of them get injured around September time. Marmoush in international duty. Kusunov, I think it was the first game back after, or maybe the second game back after the September international break. And since then, they've kind of been fall guys. Obviously, Doku has become one of the best wingers in the Premier League, and Nunes is really impressed at right back. But those, to me, I've got more faith in them, because I feel like a run of games, we've seen what they are capable of doing. In terms of Leeds, I wouldn't be surprised if one or two retain the spot, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's a full change and it's back to the starting 11 we saw against Newcastle.
Yeah. Paul Diaz scored against Newcastle, which, I mean, the fact that they lost that game and Haaland didn't score, it's an absolute waste of a goal by somebody else. but City are really struggling creatively at the moment. So, I mean, the question, I guess, is twofold. How does that change? And if it doesn't, do they just need to keep getting Haaland into good positions? Is it a case of, look, we nobody else is going to do this, so we just have to keep finding a way to get the ball to Haaland?
Yeah, I think Pep was asked the other week what about the over-reliance on Haaland, and he admitted that it was a concern, but he also said that he's in such good form that it's natural to play to his strengths, isn't it? You'd be foolish to try and think of alternatives, you know, just for the sake of it, just to try and help the others get their name on the score sheet. I mean, you can do that when you're 3-4-0 up or whatever, but I just think you keep playing to Haaland's strengths, you end up being a bit more direct. If that means like losing or not having as much of the ball, then so be it. I just think that's the best way that City are getting results at the moment. So,
I'd say also, you mentioned Swansea before that you went to. Haaland didn't play in that and they scored three times, but it felt like it felt really tough for them to actually get on the score sheet in that game. And then Leverkusen, Haaland doesn't play and they just don't look like a threat at all.
Yeah, I mean, I was watching the highlights again earlier from the Leverkusen game, and one of the highlights for the City Channel, the highlights package was 3 minutes long. One of the highlights was like an Oscar Bob cross that the keeper came and caught, and that was like that was ranked in the top three or four City chances, you know. So that shows you how bad it was. But yeah, Swansea was a bit of a struggle as well. It is an issue, isn't it? Not getting goals from the other players. You know, I remember, you know, obviously earlier in the. Certainly in the sort of second or third season, you'd have seven players reaching double figures, wouldn't you, in the City squad. But it's just not, that's not, it's just not going to happen now. I do think that Marmoush is probably better suited on the left wing than he is up front. He's got a bit more space to run into then, but how do you drop Doku given how he's playing at the moment? So it's, and it just seems intent on having Bernardo, Foden and Rodri slash Nico in the team at the moment, doesn't he? So, you know, and then Cherky's playing well as well. So I can see why one of those players who, one of those two or three of the those who the fringe players need to start sort of stepping it up now and pushing those, pushing the others, because if you see, that performance against Leverkusen just doesn't do them any favours at all. He just Pep will revert to what he knows best and stick with that for the rest of the season, basically.
Yeah. One area where they could improve and be a bit more threatening, I guess, Amos, is set pieces. How have they become so unthreatening from like a dead ball, corners, free kicks around the box? Like defending them, they feel pretty strong at them. Donnarumma keeps getting booked for dissent after fouls from crosses. But apart from that, like genuinely, they seem pretty strong defensively. But as soon as they get a corner, as soon as they get a free kick around the edge of the box, it just feels like we may as well hand the ball back and go on from the opposition goal kick. Or they may as well just play it short and build an attack, because that's a better option to try to get the ball in the net.
Yeah, it's astonishing, really. I'm looking on who scored now, and it's telling me City have scored from two set pieces this season, which that seems like I'm being gaslit. Because
it feels like they're including. So Diaz against Newcastle was a second ball in after a corner was cleared, which
that
I don't think counts.
No, set piece has to be direct contact, maybe a flick on, and then into the net. But if you if it wouldn't be ruled out for offside, then from the initial phase, then it doesn't count as a set piece. There you go. There's the definition.
We'll go with that.
Yeah, you're totally right in just how sort of unthreatening they are, because it's never been easier to score set pieces in the Premier League, because it feels like defenders just, or defensive outer, like, you know, units just have this cloud over them whenever a team gets a set piece. And I genuinely feel all Arsenal's set piece greatness, as much as they like to sort of big it up as some sort of cheat code, I genuinely feel it stemmed from just a couple of matches where they got some corners and then people started speaking about it and suddenly defenders started worrying about it. Of course, don't get me wrong, there maybe are some innovative routines that they've come up with, but I don't understand. Do you know, to me, it isn't so much the personnel, because I think, you know, City have certainly got players who can and have scored from set pieces. The deliveries so often have just been really meh. Just like the sort of the types of balls that have been put in. To be fair, I feel like Ryan Cherki has added a little bit of variation, because he can sting a ball a little bit more compared to some of the other players who sort of just very timidly float them in. I would be in the, I'd say, top five worldwide fanboys of Phil Foden, but I don't know how he's still on corners at this stage of his Man City career, because maybe the numbers will be different, but I don't remember a time where he was consistently threatening from corner kicks. Just weird, just worrying. It doesn't seem like it's going to change.
Yeah, they keep doing that thing, don't they, Paul, where they kind of play it to Haaland at the near post and he flicks it to the back post, but then Haaland isn't there to head it in, so...
He could, like, duplicate himself, clone himself, yeah. Yeah, maybe that's... It is surprising, because, you know, Ruben Dias is tall guy, very strong. You know, there was a time, wasn't it, where Pep just started buying really physical players, you're really tall, you know, players, you're like Rodri, Laporte... Diaz and sort of switched the profile a little bit of the team, but that just hasn't, you know, didn't. They used to score the odd header from a set piece from memory, but you know, it just never happens now, does it? It's like you say, whatever. It's sort of like the opposite of what happens at every other football ground, isn't it? You know, if everyone gets a corner, it's like, oh, come on, everyone's like really excited, but then at City, it's like, whenever they get the corner, someone pops off for a Bovril, don't they, or something like that.
Yeah.
I'm not watching this, Gerald. You know, I can't be bothered, because they're not going to score from it. Yeah, just maybe play it short. I mean, they got a set piece guy in, didn't they, in the summer from Liverpool? Maybe he's an undercover agent or something like that.
Double agent.
How many Geralds do you know, Paul?
Less than one, I think. Yeah.
I don't know. Do you know any Geralds, Amos?
No, a guy called. Is that the same? That's the band, isn't it? No.
Just a great name for you to pluck out of the air. That was all.
Maybe that's. You know that the old names come back in fashion, don't they? You know, so maybe Gerald's the new Henry or whatever. So yeah.
The holidays are here, and that means it's the most wonderful time of the year to save with Rakuten. Use Rakuten to stack cash back at your favorite stores on top of holiday sales. That's savings on savings. With Rakuten, you can get cash back on gifts for everyone on your list. From toys for the kids, to kitchen gear for the person who loves to cook, to electronics for everyone. You can even save on something for yourself. Just shop the stores you love, and cash back is automatically added to your account. And you can get paid with gift cards, PayPal, or check. Or eligible American Express card members can even choose to earn membership rewards points instead of cash back. It's truly a no-brainer. Join for free today and get a new member bonus after minimum qualifying purchases. Just go to Rakuten.com, download the app, or install the browser extension. That's Rakuten. Terms and conditions apply.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy. But Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
If you enjoy the show, please give it a rating and a review wherever you get your podcasts.
We'll do predictions shortly, but first, let's get some thoughts on the game at Craven Cottage from Sammy James from the Fulhamish podcast.
I think it's certainly been the toughest season in the Premier League under Marco. That's without a doubt. Not the greatest summer in the transfer window. Made very few signings, and the signings that we did came in very late. And we've lost a lot of games, and we are only 3 points off the relegation zone. And generally under Marco, we have been a lot more comfortable than that. So yeah, it's been tough. But then again, I think you scratch beneath the surface and actually look at Fulham's results this season, and nothing actually stands out as an absolute horror show of a result. We've generally tracked pretty well amongst the results and the games that you'd expect to win, lose and draw. So it's certainly been fractious. Marco being out of contract this summer is not helping anyone. But ultimately, our head is above water, so it isn't as bad as maybe some are making out.
Yeah, I was going to say, looking at the table, because we were speaking to the Leeds fan on the show earlier, and he's obviously looking at teams that they can try and finish above to stay up. And you look ahead of Leeds in the table, you've got West Ham, Forest, and then Fulham. And I'd have said Fulham, like gut instinct, it feels like Fulham would be a lot further away from it than that. So like, how are you feeling at the moment? Are you looking over your shoulder a bit at the moment?
Definitely am looking over my shoulder. And certainly, I think if we hadn't got a result against Sunderland, I think it would be panic stations. But we're winning the games that we need to win, in a way. We've beaten Wolves, Leeds, Brentford and Sunderland at home. That's our four wins. Very, very solid. You need to get 3 points from all of them, and we have. It's actually just Fulham this season haven't seemed to got any bonus points, in inverted commas. You know, we have lost our tough away games. We lost against Arsenal. We lost at Bournemouth. We lost at Villa. So I am looking over my shoulder, but I do just believe that Leeds, Burnley, Wolves, the three that are in the relegation zone right now, if push comes to shove, Fulham can finish above them. Now, that might mean Fulham finish 17th. And actually, I think that's eminently on the cards, and that's not a good season. But ultimately, when you're a club in Fulham's position, goal number one is to stay up. And if we do stay up, then that has to be considered some sort of a success, because going down is the ultimate thing you don't want to do. So I am looking over our shoulders. And the ace up the sleeve could be Leeds replacing Daniel Farker and getting in someone who actually does galvanize them and uses the home form, and suddenly Leeds become a threat. Or maybe something similar happens at Burnley. I think Wolves are gone for what it's worth right now. So you can't be complacent and think, oh, just there's three worst teams, that's fine. But I do think that Fulham have mostly a good team on paper. We've had a few injuries. We've been a bit unlucky in certain games when you think about the Josh King disallowed goal at Stamford Bridge and a few referee decisions that have been pretty ropey. Aston Villa comes to mind as well. So I think it's all okay, but I don't want to come on here and sound complacent, because it isn't that much difference between us being okay and actually us really being sucked into a dogfight.
Yeah. You mentioned the transfer business from the summer being quite light. I mean, Kevin was the headline, the Brazilian forward. How's he doing?
Not great. I don't think that means that he's a complete flop and he won't be good in time, but I think Fulham signed a raw player and are trying to make him work this season. And I think he's a next season kind of player. I think it's a bring him on late on in matches personally would be the absolute ideal use for him. But I think this is the issue. I think if you were a top eight club and you brought in Kevin, you would use him sporadically. You might use him in Europe. You might bring him off the bench and you'd warm him up so that in a season or two, he can cook to use the modern parlance. But we're trying to start him, give him full 90 minutes in the last few games. And I don't know that he came on against Leeds back in September, and I honestly thought a UFO had landed. I was like, who is this player? He was doing tricks, flicks. Gabriel Goodmanson, who was marking him, was having a torrid time. He just was like, who is this guy that they've just signed? I thought it was the new Neymar. And then against Sunderland, he actually just didn't want to, he was just passing backwards. He didn't want to take on a man. He just lost that like bit of spark that he obviously came with. Now, I think we can get that spark back. I don't think it's fully deflamed, but yeah, I think we're trying to push a very, very young, raw player into being a Premier League 90-minute winger a little bit too soon. And Marco knows that. I think Marco's doing it because he doesn't have a lot of other choice on the left wing.
Yeah, we talked at the end of last season as well, and you look at kind of how the last season finished for Fulham and kind of how it'd been a good season that kind of meandered to the end. And I'm wondering how much of this is a continuation of that as well, because the squad hasn't changed that much, has it?
No, it hasn't. And I think that was Marco's point. I think it's the age-old stand still when you go backwards analogy, really. And I think that's what Marco has been trying to push. You look at Fulham's squad, there's two good players for pretty much every position. And I took the line that most of our transfer business was quite good. I think we've been a bit unlucky. Look, losing Anthony Robinson at left back is a massive loss for us. And we had put a lot on Rodrigo Muniz up front. Now he's injured until February, so it's Raul Jimenez on his own. We brought in this third choice striker called Jonah Kousiassare, who was nicknamed Baby Isak, but I think his only relation to Alexander Isak is that also hasn't scored a goal this season.
Swedish.
And Swedish. They're performing about similar levels, just that Isak has actually had some minutes. Marco clearly didn't want him. It's been a bit of a farce, really. I think he was given by the board, and it's a little bit of a running joke at Fulham. But I think actually sometimes in the Premier League, you do have to be a little bit ruthless, and you have to say, look, Raul Jimenez has been a great servant for Fulham, but actually he's 34. Should we get in a young, fit, hungry striker who really wants to challenge Rodrigo Muniz and might actually, and look, that's a ruthless thing to do. Raul's done nothing wrong. I think Raul's a good player, but sometimes in the Premier League, you have to look at a player who is doing well for you and say, actually, there is an upgrade available. We're going to sell you for this much. We're going to buy someone for that much. And I'm really sorry. And the fans are going to be a bit upset about it, but that's how we're going to do this. And Fulham haven't done that much of that, really. It feels a little bit like, oh, well, you know, we like Timmy Castagna as the second right back. Actually, could you go out and get a better second right back than Timothy Castagna? Fulham didn't do very much of that. And I think we maybe are at the moment, certainly, I think those that say that if you stand still, you go backwards, I think those Fulham fans are being proven right now.
Yeah. Now, obviously, we're speaking before you guys have played Spurs at the weekend, so the picture could change a little bit. But at the moment, who's playing well for you right now? If you are going to take points off City at Craven Cottage, you've got a good home record this season. It's not beyond the realms of possibility. Who are the players that'll do it?
It is a tough question. I think, like, everyone's playing about 7 out of 10, it feels a little bit like. I can't put my finger on one player who is delivering knockout performances week after week. Like, I think someone like Ryan Sessegnon is doing a good job at left back, but I wouldn't say he's like changing lives. Alex Iwobi is in a bit of a new position in midfield, which does seem to be suiting him. Whether we deploy that though against Manchester City and go for something a bit more defensive in midfield, I'm not 100% sure we'll actually play Iwobi where he has been playing in some games, and he's been having good success against Wolves and Sunderland, but obviously City's a slightly different test. I guess one player who really stood out in the Sunderland match, and I'm expecting to move from a starting position on the bench to a starting position on the pitch, is Samu Chukwueze, AC Milan winger, Nigerian international, can play either on the right or the left wing, and he has just looked electric when he comes off the bench. We signed him on loan. We do have an option to buy him. And unlike Kevin, who is raw and doesn't feel like he's really going to deliver that much this season, Chukwueze looks like a Champions League level player who is ready to play right now. And Marco's been using him off the bench. He had a bit of an injury which set him back, not a huge one, but he set up the goal against the winning goal against Sunderland and looked brilliant off the bench. So I'm expecting that he will move into the starting lineup, and he is that little bit of quality that we need, especially when we're struggling to score goals. So I'm going to say he's the one to watch. The player I have said all season when doing these kind of previews has been Josh King. He is wonderful. He is exciting, and England fans should be very excited about Josh King. His control is amazing. His touch, his finesse. Actually, a lot of people compare him to Phil Foden. Like, that's the kind of player that he is. He plays in the number 10. He just looks like he's got wisdom above his years. It's a bit of a difficult one right now because he is so young, and Marco's clearly trying to bring him into that. I think Marco's like, you're the best player in this squad, but you're also 18 and it's your first season. So I'm going to occasionally not start you. I'm going to bring you off after 60. And Fulham fans are getting quite frustrated by that because we're like, why are we taking off the best player on the pitch? He is amazing. And I think he'll relish a challenge like playing Manchester City. I think that's the kind of occasion where Josh King will go, because I think Josh King will probably feel that a club at that level is his ultimate goal. So have a funny feeling that he might have some sort of sway on the match, but he also still actually hasn't got a Premier League goal or assist this season. And whilst I don't think there's any pressure on him to start delivering real numbers, he is playing number 10 in the Premier League side. So he does eventually need to start actually contributing to goals and assists. It will come, no doubt. He's brilliant. He's just been a bit unlucky. And the goal at Chelsea was obviously sacrilege that it got disallowed.
Yeah.
But he could do with getting one soon.
Yeah. How do you think Marco Silva will approach this? Because if you look at City this season, and it's certainly in the last few weeks, City have been, I wouldn't say necessarily happy to concede possession, but they've not had as much possession as they have in previous games. And kind of the control of the middle of the pitch hasn't been as strong that City have had. Do you expect him to kind of try and play on that, try and play a bit higher than maybe you would normally?
At home, we will always try and control a game. I don't think, no matter who the opponent is, Fulham will try and have the ball as much as possible. Now, sometimes that's not always possible. But I think at Craven Cottage, Fulham will like to dominate the ball. And so if he sees that City have actually been fairly happy to concede possession, no doubt Fulham will more than happily pick up that mantle. I think we will... obviously, I think we will make a few defensive changes. I imagine that we will bring in Sasha Lukic and Sander Berger as this kind of very defensive double pivot axis at the base of midfield, which some fans find very negative, but I think most fans will understand us playing that way for Manchester City. And I think we will try and create chances, and we will create chances against, I think, probably the game to look at from how we will try and play is the game that we actually played against Arsenal a few weeks back, when actually we were a little bit injury ravaged And we took Arsenal pretty close. We had a lot of chances in that game. Admittedly, I don't think we actually got a shot on target, but we like should have had shots on target. We had good opportunities and dragged it wide or hit it over the bar or something like that. I think we had Arsenal, I wouldn't say on the ropes, that's a bit much, but we played a good game against Arsenal. And then in the 60th minute, we conceded a set piece. Kind of standard what's been happening in Arsenal games this season. But I don't think this Fulham side is ever that scared or intimidated by any other team. I don't think we'll play a back five and try to park the bus unless there's been some sort of injury between now and then. I think we will try and have a go at City. And I guess the important thing to say here is that City is almost like one of the final bosses for Fulham in terms of get like this run has to end. This stupid run against Manchester City. And I know it's City. You're not expected to win many because you're City. But I've actually lost count of how many defeats it is in a row. You might have that stat to hand, David. I believe it's about 16 to 18 losses, straight losses. And we have to at some point just get a draw. That's all I want. A nice one all draw, just so that when I go on 11v11.com, I don't just see L. That would be what I hope for from this game.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the record now, and it stretches quite a way back.
It stretches back to when City weren't that good.
Yeah, the last point I can see that Fulham took was in 2011. So yeah, it's been a while. With that in mind, Sammy, we got the charity bet. What's your score prediction?
1-1. I'm going to do it. I think I've done this preview a couple of times a season for the last few years, and I think I nearly always try and think that this will be the time. What's frustrating is that I think in the last few seasons, we have pushed you so close. Like that home game last year, I mean, the game away for Fulham, but at the Etihad, if Dharma Traore knew how to finish, we would have won that 6-3. Like, we really, really played well that game. We do have a knack of playing you final game of the season and just slightly surrendering, which is what happened in May, let's be honest. We had nothing on the line and you had to win to get in the Champions League, and Fulham just was like, what's the point? Like, so this is not going to be that occasion because it's mid-season, it's midweek, it's under the lights at the Cottage, and I see no reason why Fulham are we're not going to back off in this one, for sure. You know, I think we need to take advantage of the fact that, you know, you're playing more games at the moment and it's back to back to back for you, whereas for us, it's just league games that we're worried about and eventually the Carabao Cup. So yeah, I'm going to go for 1-1 draw for the sake of the charity bet and being positive. Obviously, I'm not expecting too much, but look, you guys are slightly beatable this year. I can't quite work it out. It's like
weird, isn't it?
You mostly are winning the games that you need to comfortably. You seem to be getting unstuck by difficult away games. I don't think Fulham really goes into that category, but I think we've got to take a leaf out of what Newcastle did at the weekend. Just stay in the game, stay, you know, try. We will be able to have chances against you guys. We just need to take a couple of them. That's the key thing. If we take some of the chances that we maybe make in the first half, then I see us maybe, and a draw would be lovely. I think we'd all be absolutely delighted with that.
Email the show through our website, bluemoonpodcast.com.
Sammy James from Fulhamish. Now, nobody was correct on last week's show, would you believe? That means we're still on £75 raised for the charity bet so far this season. After last season's success, we're really bringing the average back down to normal this year, so time to see if we can't change that on today's episode. William Hill has given us 3 £10 correct score singles. The winnings will go to the Man City Fans Food Bank Support Group, and they will once again be outside the Etihad on Saturday collecting for Manchester Central Food Bank up until about 2:30, so go and see them with a donation if you can. Callum rather optimistically gave Leeds a goal, he said. So he's gone for 4-1 to City. That's 14-1 and £140 if he's right. Amos, what are you having for this?
The Leeds game, is that? Yeah.
Leeds game, yeah.
2-0. I could also see it being 8-0, but I feel like the Leverkusen changes will dampen the mood in the dressing room a little bit.
Solid 2-0. Not spectacular, but solid 2-0 is 11-2 and £55 if you're right. Paul, a little insight into Paul's Sheffield Wednesdaydom here is he sent me the Leeds result, the prediction, but he asterisked out the word Leeds. So what are you having for this?
Well, it was L star 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 S. Because it is just it's a swear word in among Sheffield Wednesday fans, Leeds. So 4-0. Yeah.
4-0 City is 11-1 and 110 quid if you are right. Sammy from Formish went for a 1-1 draw. That's 13-2 and 65 quid. Amos?
2-1. A very nervy 2-1.
Very nervy 2-1. He's also 13-2. Bookies can't split it, so that's 65 quid as well. And Paul, what are you going for City down at the at Craven Cottage?
Very narrow 1-0 win to City.
Narrow 1-0 is 6-1 and 60 quid if you are right. Remember, you've got to be 18 or over to gamble. Prices can change. And for information on responsible gambling, have a look at gambleaware.org. We will finish with a quick listener question. Get in touch for future episodes on Blue Sky at bluemoonpodcast.com over there. You can email contact at bluemoonpodcast.com as well. And I've been trying to stick an Instagram story up on the day before recording each week, but I've forgotten in the last few weeks. I remembered this week. So just search Blue Moon Podcast, give us a follow, and have a look at the Instagram story before recordings there. John's been in touch on emails to say, do you think City will need to go into the market again in January? And what positions need strengthening? I'm worried that if Haaland gets injured, Marmoush isn't enough to cover. And Paul, this is interesting because you could possibly have made an argument for City going into the market in the past, but they really don't want to add to this squad that's already as big as it is.
No, exactly. Yeah, I think this Pep keeps reminding us this is a bigger squad than he's used to. So I don't see anyone coming in January. I take the point about Marmoush, but need another striker. But what do you end up spending like a lot of money on one guy you were maybe looking at in the summer, and playing that second role to Haaland is just it's a very difficult task, isn't it? You know, Alvarez played it, you know, fantastically and managed to reinvent himself as a number 10, or you know, and scored a lot of goals for City. But it's just you're always going to be playing, you know, half the minutes of Haaland, aren't you? The squad is really big, and the last foray into the January transfer market wasn't the best, was it? So you look at those players who came in towards the end of last season. Marmoush is probably the exception, played well. You know, Rice and Kuznov clearly not ready. Nico started off great and then, you know, went off a cliff. So I think if that's taught us anything, investing in the January transfer window is not for City. So, yeah, I think Pep would be pretty happy with the squad. Maybe Calvin, loan him out somewhere if anyone fancy taking him on, if anyone remembers that he exists, bless him. And I do actually like him. I think he's a really nice fella. But and he does need a move, doesn't he? So it's but in terms of incomings, I don't see him signing anyone.
Yeah, Amos, do you feel it's a bit like a nightclub at the moment where they've got to get people out before they can get them in?
Yeah, and as Paul was saying that, I was thinking Oscar Bob Savinio, we've mentioned them and they've been relatively, well, I'd say ineffective, you know, flat out. It wouldn't surprise me if there was a move there. And then there was tentative talk. Is it Antoine Semenyo's got a buyout in his contract for January and City were reportedly sniffing around that one. Maybe
City love a good buyout as well.
They do, yeah. They do. Although maybe Cheeky's left, hasn't he? Will Hugo Viana carry that lantern, perhaps? Semenyo's played majority of his football this season on the left-hand side, though. That's where he's been the best. And is he going to come in and replace Doku? Obviously not. Is he going to sit around and wait for Doku when you've got Marmoush? I don't know if it works. I don't think it does. But I wouldn't be surprised if there was a surprise outgoing because, as we say, Guardiola's squad, big. And he doesn't like big squads.
I wonder famously. If the big squad thing is the reason why he made such a weird decision on Tuesday night, because he's talked in the past about feeling guilty about leaving players out.
Echeverry on a 1-0 down in the cup final, you know.
Yeah, like, and the guilt gets to him, and he just looked at that squad and went, "I haven't played these guys in ages. I need to play them all."
In that case, the assistant manager should sit him down, pour cold water over his head and say, sort yourself out.
Word again, yourself, man. Yeah.
You've triggered me again, David. I was just about getting over it, but now I'm going to have to go lock myself in a dark room.
Sorry about that. I do apologise. I mean, the other thing is, as Paul says about kind of the foray into the January window, City are very, very kind of long-termist with their transfers normally, Amos. They normally think about kind of the effect that they'll have, not for this season, but for next season. So if this season isn't going particularly well, like, it's almost like they wouldn't put, like last season, they had to get bodies in. They had nobody in the squad who was fit to play, and they were running on empty. But, and you saw, as Paul said, as soon as the players that were injured were back, the January signings disappeared for a bit. So when you think of that for the back end of this season, if they are within touching distance of Arsenal and they do have a Champions League playoff, for instance, but everybody's fit, there's kind of no reason to change it, is there?
Yeah, it's totally. And like I say, the only, say, for example, Semenyo is in their top three targets for the wing positions, and, I know, hypothetically speaking, Liverpool make a move and City are going, you know what, in the summer window, do we fancy ourselves to, again, hypothetically, go and get Elise, for example? Maybe that isn't going to work. Perhaps they then go, yes, Semenyo in January, activate that clause, whatever, because it's a market opportunity. Otherwise, you know, they are certainly not a buy for buying sake. And to be fair, like you say, I don't think they need to be of this season, of all seasons, even if perhaps maybe Arsenal are in reach. Because again, what's the upside? You might bring someone in now, but it disrupts the squad planning. It disrupts the potential moves for the summer transfer window. Are City desperate to win one of the big major trophies this season? I would suspect at boardroom level, in terms of squad planning, probably not, because they see the bigger picture. The other aspect, which is probably a good job to mention it now because we're finishing, is could this perhaps be Guardiola's final season? In which case it might move the needle a little bit if he wants a final crack at the Champions League whip or whatever. But that's a conversation for a totally different day and a totally different podcast.
That's interesting, Paul, because when he said when Amos said there the one thing to mention, I thought, oh, this is going to be charges.
Yeah,
I'll mention them. Semenyo's interesting, isn't he? I think, like you said, Amos, if you buy him, I mean, what does that? You can't really play him and Doku, can you? And unless you. I mean, Pep's the master of reinventing players, isn't he? So if he sticks him out on the right wing, maybe, you know, he can reinvent him that way. But learning how to play under Pep usually takes a good year, doesn't it? And that includes a full pre-season, which is, you know, very rigorous. And, you know, you walk through the tactics with him and the shape and all that kind of stuff. And that is such a rigorous process. I think the only one that's really worked for City was Laporte, wasn't it? And that was another season where they needed a body, didn't they? They needed a centre half desperately, and he's a clever player, very very technically sound. So he found it less of a struggle to adapt. But yeah, I think it's just it's asking a lot of a player to come in January. I mean, what would Marmoush think if Semenyo comes in? I mean, would Marmoush have to go? You know, because he would be effectively replacing him, wouldn't he, as the backup left winger and the backup striker as well. So, yeah, it's a difficult one. I just don't see them. I just think as a club, they like to keep their powder dry for the summer. So that's, I just can't see it happening.
Yeah, well, that is it for this episode of the Blue Moon Podcast. Thank you very much to my guests for this one, Paul Hurst.
Thank you.
And Amos Murphy.
Pleasure. Thank you, David.
There is a clip of the most recent Nostalgia episode coming up shortly. That was Amos alongside City fan Adam Monk picking their top 10 Wembley games. And as we say, Amos deeply ashamed of it, so go and listen to it. The full thing is available now for Patreon members. Head on over to members.bluemoonpodcast.com for more information. We've also got Christmas coming up, and since I'm selling things right now, go and have a look. If you want a Christmas present for a City fan in your life, then you could go and buy them a year's subscription to the Patreon. They'll get this show ad-free, plus the Nostalgia episodes every month. Monday, and to get more information on that, head on over to gift.bluemoonpodcast.com. I'll be back next week with hopefully a more upbeat show. Maybe see you then.
That was the Blue Moon Podcast. Please give the show a rating and a review where you can. And don't forget, you can listen without the ads by signing up to our Patreon. You'll also get an extra episode each Monday. Here's a clip of this week's.
It'll always be the most symbolic FA Cup final win. Obviously, I know the United one helped complete the treble, but the first one, I just remember the imagery of that day. It was 35 years without a trophy. It banished that United banner at Old Trafford. And it was a cagey game. I remember Joe Hart saving a chance from Kenwyn Jones, I want to say it was. Yeah. It was never going to be an easy game, that, and it didn't prove to be. And the goal we scored was scrappy, really, if you think about it. Kind of, we forced it through to, maybe was it Balotelli? Then it ricochets out to Torre. And I just think, like, to banish 35 years of pain and no trophy, the way Torre scored that goal to emphatically leather it in and nearly break the net and consequently break a 35-year curse that the club had had.
I missed that goal. I was in the toilet, annoyingly. And it's weird, the way Wembley's set up, if someone scores a goal and it's your side, your team scores, it sounds like it's the opposite team. Then obviously you get back up and the noise just hits you, and you realise that, no, it is City. And yeah, to actually do it, the celebrations, the first time, like, you I'm assuming like 95% of City fans who are listening to this, maybe more, would have known what a trophy celebration feels like.
You can listen to more of that at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast. And join us again next time for another episode.
QTS is building more than a data center in Dane County. We're partnering with Alliant Energy to enable 750 megawatts of new renewable energy sources, supporting sustainable generation while lowering costs. We use a closed-loop, water-free cooling system that conserves billions of gallons of water each year. And we're investing millions locally, from scholarships and workforce development to nonprofits and first responders. QTS, powered by people, driven by purpose. Paid for by QTS.
Did you know that over 80% of companies in America, each generating more than $100 million in revenue, don't show up on public stock exchanges? They're private and are largely not an option for 401k investors. But now there's a chance for everyday American savers to opt in for access through the 401k plan if they choose to. Regardless of how you're building for the future, you deserve the same opportunities because you've earned the right to more. Learn more by visiting retiresafer.org. Paid for by the Council for a Safe and Secure Retirement.